Tango Tango Papa 1782, October 19th, 2013.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Dunn, North Carolina. So, been staying pretty busy. Actually, until today, although I was kind of sort of busy today, I had unloaded in Gordonsville, Virginia this morning. And then they sent another load that is kind of a long deadhead that picked up in supposed to pick up in Clinton, North Carolina. And so I made it to Clinton, North Carolina this evening. I don't know, it's probably about 8 o'clock, maybe Eastern time or something like that. And so checked in with the place, and they said, well, you know, they checked in with the guard, and it should have been a drop and hook, but the load wasn't loaded, and they talked to the shipping department, and they came back and said, well, it's not going to load until Monday because we don't have the product. And so in the meantime, I relayed the message to my, the dispatch, the night dispatch people, and they sort of dragged their feet for a while, and they finally came up with another load that loads in the same place, going to the same place. So I tried calling the place back. In the meantime, there's a Love's truck stop that's about 31 or 32 miles away. And so I came to the Love's trucks, or actually it's a Pilot truck stop, rather. I was going to go to Love's, and I changed my mind and came to the Pilot, which is close by. But anyway, I've tried calling them a couple of times in their shipping department and ended up with voicemail. So I'll just wait until tomorrow morning and then call them back and make sure before I go back over there. Because chances are, if it's going to the same place, it's probably the same product, and they're probably out of it. So, wouldn't be surprised at all. So, I'm going to find that out before I drive back over there tomorrow. So, in any case, I'm spending the night here in this truck stop, and there's plenty of time on the load. The load is set to deliver Tuesday morning at 11 a.m. The original load that they'd sent me on was supposed to deliver at that same place. I think it's Vernon, Pennsylvania, which is Pittsburgh area. And a kind of an impossible place, but I was there about a month ago. But in any case, it was set to deliver at 7 a.m. on Tuesday. So, that was the load that they said they didn't have the product for. So I'm going to call them and find out if they really have the product for this other load or not. And chances are good that they don't. Because if it's a load that's coming out of a factory, I think it's kind of a pork place, if it's coming out of there and they don't have the load, they don't have the stuff to make the load, then, and it's going to the same place in Vernon, Pennsylvania, chances are good that it's the same type of stuff. It's just more of the same. And so I would say that they're going to be finding me a different load tomorrow after but I'll find that out in the morning. I'm not going to worry about it this evening. So, otherwise, I've been staying pretty busy. I'm actually sort of running low on hours anyway. That's why they gave me a load that didn't deliver until Tuesday. because my hours kind of are running a little bit low, so I really don't mind having to sit just a little bit, because it's going to happen somewhere anyway, because, you know, once I start running low on hours, then then I'm just low on hours, and that has to be, they have to kind of slow the loads down or give me a little more time on a load to deliver it. So anyway, I think I'm going to have to pause this. It's fairly warm. It's been fairly warm outside. Now, I looked a while ago, and it was, let me see what it is now. It was upper 60s earlier. Excuse me. Let's see what it says. 63, and it's supposed to get down to 42 this evening, but right now it's 63, and I've got the windows up here in the truck, and it's getting just a little bit too stuffy in here, and I'm starting to break a sweat a little bit. So I'm going to have to pause this and see if I can't roll the windows down so it cools off a little bit. Be right back. All right, so I'm back. Rolled the windows down a little bit, so there may be a little bit more background noise, but that's kind of par for the course for my podcast, because it's pretty rare that any of the podcasts that I've produced are going to be completely, you know, with a completely silent background. Because in a truck stop, there's always motors that are running. I think the truck next to me, there's a reefer unit running, and on the other side, I think I hear a motor running. So that's just sort of unavoidable, but apparently, I don't know, I've had a lot of people tell me they like hearing the background noise. I know a lot of podcasters are really paranoid about any kind of background noise, and what I've never understood why a lot of podcasters, they'll start talking about the background noise and you can't even hear it. Especially I can't hear it. I'm driving down the road usually when I'm listening to podcasts, and here they're talking about, oh, I've got some kind of a dog barking or whatever in the background. Most of the time you can't even hear it. I've never understood why they call attention to it. It doesn't make any sense. So, but oh well. So anyway, I have a comment that was kind of in response to the last podcast from Joel McLaughlin. And in the last podcast, I'd played a comment by Scott, and Scott was talking about science and so on and so forth, and I kind of did a stop start on it, kind of reacting to it, and basically to kind of recap what I said, the theory of science, the theory of the scientific method is great. It's not a problem. Where the problem comes in is that people are scientists, and people can be very unethical. And that's especially true, if you think about this, it's especially true if someone really claims to be a scientist, and they're most of them have to, there's a lot of atheist scientists that'll say that, oh, I'm an atheist and what have you. There's a few scientists that are brave enough to talk about their belief in God and a belief in a creator, but they risk, that's politically incorrect in the world of science to believe in God. And so they do that at their own risk, at the career risk, because everything is so tied to this government grant system that we have. They really, their speech is really under control. So they dare not talk about believing in God and what have you. But many of them, many scientists, do claim to be atheists and what have you. Well, if they have no moral, because a lot of religion revolves around morality, And if they have no moral code, then how do you know what they're telling you? You know, they can claim that they, you know, that they have the scientific method and so on and so forth. How do you know they're honest? Because there's nothing to restrain them. You know, what's church is like a spiritual prison. It's sort of like a spiritual jail. You go to church, and you know, church is religion is sort of like a, to a large extent, it sort of turns into a spiritual jail. That's what, to keep you from falling, you know, to keep you from falling any farther, or to try to restrain your fall. And within that framework, if you're really searching, then you can also, if you're a truly searching person, you can find the truth, regardless of where you are or whether you're in a religion or not. I really believe that if you're really a searching person, you can find the truth. That's, you know, so, but someone that claims to be an atheist, how do you know that they have any morals? How do you know they have any scruples? Chances are they don't. Because science itself, you know, they can claim, well, we're honest because we're scientists. Well, not necessarily. There's plenty, as I said before, there's plenty of examples where so-called scientists just make things up. I was listening to a podcast, I think, earlier today. And they were sort of, I don't remember what the podcast was about, but they were talking about studies. You know, we have all these studies that are being done today. And there was a surprisingly large percentage of them that could not be reproduced. People tried to reproduce the results of the studies, you know, all these published studies. And I think over 67% seems to stick in my mind. 67% of them in this sample couldn't be reproduced. So in other words, a minority of the studies that were sampled, that they were talking about, a minority of them, maybe just 30% could be actually reproduced, which that's shocking. So anyway, so Joel was sort of responding to this kind of conversation back and forth that I was having with the comment that Scott had sent. And so let's go ahead and listen to Joel. So here's Joel.
This is a comment about your last show there. The one thing I do want to comment on with this is, you know, they talk about abortions. I know your stance on that. But kind of my response to, I believe it was Scott, I can't remember. Here's my thoughts on that. I have well, she's younger than I am. She's probably, you know, late 20s, early 30s. Mother and father. They are both very active and very involved in the church. They sing on the worship team. Run the craft show that we had, this past weekend. They were hugely responsible in that. But here is my one big thought on this. They have two daughters, Ashlyn and Addison. And I forget which one, but one of them, the answer the doctor gave to them is that your baby's never going to be normal. And that they should abort her. Everything in their being, they prayed about it, they talked to God about it, and everything in their being said that this doctrine was wrong. And because they put faith in God, and put faith in Him, their baby's now like 9 years old and walking around and very smart and very intelligent. If they listen to this crazy doctor that told them to kill their baby because it's never going to have a hope of having a normal life, well, their daughter has a normal life. Their daughter is one of the smartest ones in her class. people who don't believe in God like to point to science, and basically science is their God. If science is infallible, science is fallible. If you don't think so, just look at this situation. You don't think so, look at the people that, you know, my mother-in-law had cancer. And they told her that she wouldn't live, I think, 6 months at least, I don't know, 4 or 5 times through her 10-year battle when she finally passed away. And if we just gave up hope, you know, putting our faith in God, you know, we would fail. We would not be who we are.
Okay, well, thank you, Joel. That illustrates the problem perfectly. It really does, that situation. Where, you know, the question is, where do you put your hope? You know, because we have this thing, and it's really, you can call it faith or whatever, but it's sort of, really, it's also hope. What do you, you know, and do you put your hope in things that are hopeless? Now, I finally realized after many years that I had just kind of put my hope in the political process. And the problem is that I finally realized that the political process is hopeless. And the reason being, of course, is that once the morality has, too much of the morality has sort of escaped the general population, or the general population sort of escaped from morality, in a sense. Once that morality is gone, once that God-given morality is gone, then too much of it, then the political process won't work. Because our political process only works if people are moral, if they have a natural moral restraint. And of course, there are people that will argue, well, that's not, there's no such thing as natural. It's, we're all programmed, and so we're just programmed animals, and so on and so forth. And those people are flat out wrong. They're misguided. And, you know, they're there for a purpose. But you have to be able to sort of dig and find within yourself, using those people, those kind of people as a foil, you have to be able to find within yourself, you know, that something that you can really put your hope into. And so the political process is hopeless. Now, do you put your hope into doctors? Or some sort of, different procedures? You know, and hope, it's kind of an interesting thing, and it's sort of nebulous. What is it really? You know, can you really define it? It's kind of one, you know, the way I look at it, it's sort of one of those things. I know it when I see it. But it kind of comes down to this. If you really, you know, and it's a mysterious thing, if you really have a relationship with your Creator, and not just in words, but whatever that is, if you really have that relationship, then you have real hope. then it literally doesn't matter what other people do. It doesn't matter what other people say. It doesn't matter what other people's opinion of you is, etc., etc., etc. It fundamentally changes your relationship. If you've got a genuine, you genuinely know that there's a creator. And again, that's kind of that's sort of a mysterious thing. I can only explain with words what I'm saying, and someone can listen and be skeptical and say, oh, well, that's just gobbledygook, and so it must work for you. Well, that's all well and good, but it doesn't work for me. Well, if it doesn't work for you, too bad. But if you really have a relationship with your creator, you really know that your creator exists, then it fundamentally transforms how you think about existence and so on and so forth. If you don't have that relationship, then you're just floundering. And you're looking for little, trying to grab on to things like the scientific method and so on and so forth, which is fine. You're sort of grabbing onto logic, in a sense, bits and pieces of logic. But the problem is that there's a fundamental element that's missing. And you can't put your hope just in processes, and you have to put your hope in people that call themselves scientists. And if they don't have any morals, if they they're atheistic and they don't have any morals and they believe that they're God, because that's what it really comes down to. Either you really know there's a God, or by default, you believe you're God. And that's really what it comes down to. You're God, and then you create your false gods, because remember, the God maker is always greater than the God. So if you have a, let's say you're an ancient Israelite and you have your little statue that your little mud statue that you're worshiping, that might be a pile of poop that you're worshiping, that's your God. You've created a God, so people can create all kinds of false gods. But the point being that you either know the real God, or you're playing God in your own mind. Somewhere in the back of your own mind, you're God, and you're sort of, you may not even think that. You may think, well, I know that I'm not God, and so on and so forth, but then again, it has to do with how you end up relating to the world. And if you know there's a creator, then you're able to relate to the world. It fundamentally changes how you relate to the world, versus if you don't know you don't know that there's a creator, then you're floundering around, and that really causes your ability to perceive and observe to become perverted. But perverted in such a way that, and then your ego will never, the wrong side of your ego will never admit that anything's wrong. And, it's interesting, because the more corrupt people become, the more corrupt people become, real solutions become more threatening. And so if you become more dysfunctional, more corrupted, more dysfunctional, real solutions, things that, that offer real hope, become more threatening. You see those as a threat. But this situation with the doctor, the doctor telling, that your child is, it's never going to be right. You better abort it. It's not going to be right. go ahead and abort it. You know, that is a pretty hideous thing to, you know, for someone to claim to be a doctor, you know, and I'm sure he, you know, this doctor probably in his own mind was thinking that he, you know, he has all the science and so on and so forth. And, of course, we don't know the details if he'd done tests or if they're, you know, if now 9 years ago, the genetic testing, you know, more rudimentary versions of genetic testing existed. You know, we think today it's interesting how technology really invades, and then we think it's been around forever. But if you go back, when was the O.J. Simpson? Like 19, I'd have to look that up. I think it was maybe, well, let me look that up right now, because that was a, because O.J. Simpson was kind of a landmark thing. Because the you know, they did the DNA testing, and it was kind of a brand new thing, and they basically proved, if I'm remembering correctly, they basically proved that it was his DNA, but it was inadmissible. They kind of ruled that it was inadmissible. So let's see, O.J. Simpson trial. There we go. Simpson trial. There we go. Let's see. O.J. Simpson. And let's click on the Wikipedia article. And let's see when this was. Okay, O.J. Simpson, 95. So it was opening statements on January 24, 1995. Let's see. The murders occurred in 1994. And 97, a jury, February 6, 1997, jury found, and unanimously found there was a preponderance of evidence to hold Simpson liable for damages in the wrongdoing of Goldman and Brown. That was the civil judgment. Now, where, I'm trying to read this, by the end of the criminal trial. They don't really give the date for the end of the criminal trial. That's what I was looking for. But anyway, it was in the late, you know, it was in the later part of the 90s, probably around maybe 97 or something, whenever the trial ended. So the DNA testing was kind of a really new thing, and you know, now it's even 9 years ago. You know, the DNA testing wasn't as sophisticated as it is now, and we don't even know if they did DNA testing. What kind of test did this doctor do? So, but for the doctor to just arbitrarily tell them, you know, your baby's never going to be normal, you better abort it. That's, I just can't imagine doing something like that. What kind of a doctor would do that? What kind of a person? You know, forget about doctor. What kind of a person would tell parents to be, you know, potential parents that they should have an abortion, that they should kill their baby, it's never going to be right, something going to be wrong with it, and, you know, what kind of a person would do that? What kind of a person would do that? And then for it to come out, you know, the parents did the right thing, because the parents followed because it's obvious they really, where their hope really was, it wasn't in the doctors, it wasn't in, you know, whatever the doctor, medical procedures the doctor performed. Their hope was in something else. Their hope was in their creator. And they followed that hope. And it turned out that they made the right choice. So, you know, even, you know, there's, of course, the big thing, you know, they can, with the DNA testing that they do today, you know, they find Down syndrome. And the vast majority now of Down syndrome pregnancies, as I understand it, today are being aborted. Parents just abort those, you know, put them out of their misery before they even have a chance to exist. You know, I think that's wrong. I think that's criminally wrong, because you're murdering people. And who are we, the living, to decide who has quality of life and who doesn't? Even if you're a parent, even if you're going to be, you have to be responsible, and it's going to cost you money, and so on and so forth. I'm sorry, but you know, you did the crime. You know, don't do the crime unless you can do the time. You know, if you're going to have the 5 minutes of pleasure, you know, the sex, then you know, you better be willing to, you know, because that sex act is—it's not just. It doesn't exist just for our pleasure. That sex act is a pretty, I'm searching for a word, it be not just powerful, but it's a pretty big, is not a very good word, a descriptive word, but it's a big deal. It's not some little insignificant thing that you can just, oh, you just have sex and we'll just get rid of the unwanted byproduct. If an unwanted pregnancy pops up, we'll just take care of it. You know, and that's what's led to the problems. You know, that's one of the things that sort of led to the problems that we face today, but then again, it's also evidence of more, you know, our moral failure. So, but that's a, you know, where do we put our hope? Where do you put your hope? Do you put your hope, you know, and some people, you know, they say, well, you know, they put their hope in the scientific process. That's basically what Scott was saying, that he put his hope in the scientific process. Well, you know, the problem is you're putting your hope also in scientists, because you know, the scientific process, who's practicing it, and how do you know that? You know, what ethical standards do those purported scientists, what ethical standards do they hold? Again, you know, what kind of a person would tell parents that they should abort their child? You know, kind of creating doubt, getting them to doubt what they know is right. What kind of a person would do that? A scientist, a doctor, doctor scientist, in this case, if the doctor is a scientist, you know. And then, but that's convenient, because then you can say, well, they're not scientists. Well, they are. You know, you can say they are, and then you can say they aren't. There's science. So, but anyway, that's a great example of what should you do? Should you listen to, you know, if you have a, you know, you can call it gut instinct or whatever, because a lot of people call it that, but if you know, if you really feel compelled to either do something or not do something, then my advice, if you really feel compelled, is to listen to that. Whatever it is that's compelling you, if it stands the test of time, you know, the last thing you want to do is allow someone to pressure you into doing something. And I'm sure this doctor, in this case, was applying pressure. But the last thing you want to do is to allow someone to pressure you into doing something. Because if you know, once you start responding to the pressure, it's if you make any kind of a decision, if someone's pressuring you, then and you just go ahead and make the decision. Excuse me. You go ahead and make a decision based on pressure. Your chances are really good you're going to make the wrong decision. And then even if you make the right decision, you've made it for the wrong reason. You should not act out of pressure. It, you know, if you really feel like you're being pressured and someone's trying to pressure you to decide, the thing to do is to just not do anything. And if you just sit on it and you wait, chances, you know, there's about a 100% chance that that pressure is going to die down, and then you'll just know what to do. You'll know the right thing to do. And that, I use that principle to guide my life. You know, I talked about it before, back, you know, back in, from about 2000 into 2002, for about 2 years, I was a network administrator at an ophthalmology clinic. And a computer network administrator. I'd always wanted to work on computers. I'd always thought, you know, it was a neat hobby and so on and so forth. And I always thought that wouldn't it be neat to have a job doing that? You know, make your living working on computers. And I had the, you know, I was really fortunate. You know, here I am, you know, no college at all. The only kind of computer course, formal training I ever had was like a network administrator. What was it called? Network Plus. You know, where they basically, it was like a 3-month course, and they taught, you know, like TCP/IP and so on and so forth. It was a night course, and it might not even have been 3 months, but. You know, that's the only formal training that I had, and yet here I was able. How did that happen? How was I able to get a network administrator job? So I was fortunate. I was able to do it. But I found out that I really didn't like it. And it wasn't because of the... It really wasn't because of the computers. I like working with computers, so it wasn't the computers. And it wasn't, you know, the people at the clinic liked me. You know, they weren't yelling at me. I was actually very well liked, even though I was the IT guy. I was very well liked, so on and so forth. But I felt like I was being sort of eaten alive, in a sense. I felt like someone had, stuck a giant syringe in and the life was being sucked out. And I knew that if I stayed in that job, that it was, I was going to end up with probably with medical problems, you know, because I felt like I was under some pretty good stress, even though, you know, I mean, how much stress is there? You go to work and you're there from, you know, like 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, sometimes I had to be there later if there was a virus or something that got on the computer, because, you know, you had those users that would click on virtually any link in the emails. It was, anything that came in, they'd be clicking on it. You know, and sometimes that's disastrous on a network, of course. So, but, you know, I found myself in a job that I did not like. It was just sort of going against the grain. And I felt like I was being eaten alive. And most people would look at that and they'd say, well, you know, you're making X number of dollars, you know, and I'd even demanded a raise at one point and they gave it to me. So I was making a nice little income. Yet people would think, well, you're crazy. Why would you quit that? My gut instinct said quit. And I sat on it for a while. I just waited. And I waited and I waited. And then I finally knew that that's what I had to do. And so I called them together, the doctor and his office administrator, and I just basically announced my decision. I gave them a couple of weeks' notice, and that was that. And they wanted me to continue to work. They even, you know, and it was interesting because even after I went to work, back to work driving a truck over the road, there was a, you know, two or three times I actually came in there, you know, one of my days off, and actually helped them out. And they were happy to see me. And they would have, even at that point, they would have hired me back. If I wanted to come back, they would have hired me back. But, you know, once I went back to driving a truck, it was just a huge relief. And, you know, I haven't looked back since. But I'm glad that I had that opportunity. I'm fortunate, very fortunate that I had that opportunity, because it would have been one of those things. Well, it, you know, the circumstances just conspired, and I always wanted to work on computers, and I never got the opportunity. Oh, woe is me. Well, I did have the opportunity, and I found out that it wasn't what I thought it was. And it, and again, it was me. It wasn't the people. It was, if anything, it was me. Not, you know, I don't know what it was about the job, but I didn't like kind of being cooped up. I so on and so forth. And so I went back to driving a truck. And I'm fortunate that, you know, most of the time I like driving a truck. You know, most of the time, the vast majority of the time, I enjoy it. And I actually enjoy traveling. I actually enjoy being gone. And somehow I stumbled into a job to begin with that I actually seemed to be pretty well suited for and that I actually like. And so, you know, as I say, I went back to driving a truck, and that's been, I think I came back in late 2002 or maybe 2003, and you know, haven't looked back. You know, it's been a, you know, so, but that was completely on a gut instinct, essentially. You know, if you look at the circumstances, you'd think, oh, well, you're crazy, because you're home every night, and you know, it's an easy job, and you're in the air conditioning all the time, and so on and so forth. You know, you're crazy for quitting that, you know, because you don't have to work, you know, there's not much physical, you don't have to really work hard physically. It's not straining physically, so on and so forth. And, but it was interesting. Now, tonight, or earlier today, when I was, before I went to pick that load up, I stopped at there's this truck stop at Kinley, North Carolina, and they've got a, you know, pretty good-sized Petro truck stop, and there's a Wendy's inside there. You know, they got this food court inside the truck stop, and so I was in line at Wendy's, and this EMS guy, there were some EMS people that were eating in there, and this EMS guy, you know, kind of struck up a conversation with me. And I just happened to kind of, I don't remember how the conversation went exactly, but I happened to talk about, you know, that I'd been a network administrator and that I'd quit and came back to driving a truck. And this guy basically had the same story. He had been a network administrator. He decided that he just couldn't take it anymore. He couldn't do it one more day, and so he... I guess he initially quit, and he got a job delivering uniforms. You know, probably, I don't know the, you know, what is it, like, I can't think of the name of a uniform company. But anyway, you know, like delivering uniforms, like you'd deliver, you know, you'd see in mechanic shops and different places like that. And then apparently at some point he became, you know, he got an EMS job. But he had the same story. He said basically he just could not stand the... It was just eating at him, and so it happens. And he listened to his gut instinct, and it led him the right way. So the question is, where do you put your hope? Do you put your hope in statistics? Do you put your hope in, you know, when you make a decision, do you write down all the pros and cons? Because that's really a poor way of doing it. You know, I know people will sort of list pros and cons. You know, should I do this? Should I not do this? And these are all the pros and these are all the cons, and they feel like they're under pressure. Well, don't, you know, you can do that if you feel compelled to write down pros and cons before you make a decision. You know, have at it, but don't act on it right away. Just wait. Because if you wait until the pressure goes away, You know, and I'm talking about psychological pressure, because the people around you and yourself, the wrong side of your ego, you know, you'll put pressure on yourself to sort of make the wrong kind of, you know, make a decision. And chances are you're going to make the wrong decision. And even if you make the right decision, you're going to make it for the wrong reason. You should never act under duress or pressure, regardless of where it's coming from. So if you just wait, you'll know what to do. You really will. You'll know what to do. Just don't act as, never act as a result of either you pressuring yourself or someone else pressuring you. So, but in any case, where do you put your hope? And, you know, it's crazy because people will, they do put their hope in the political process. They put their hope in really stupid things. I've even heard, I remember listening to something once, and people, there's like an interview with people in some kind of a, like a third world country, like Haiti, you know, really bad third world country. And these people were, you know, where do you put your, our hope is in our music. Now, how can they, I mean, that's absurd if you think about it. How could your hope be in your music? It's ridiculous. You know, because that's almost like, you know, that's really, what is music? I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of pretty and so on and so forth. It can be kind of pretty or, you know, it's nice to listen to sometimes. But do you put your hope in it? You know, because it's kind of like, you know, someone, you know, that's sitting around going, they're putting their hope in that. You know, what? Or someone sitting around pounding on a drum. You know, that's their hope. And what it is, it's a distraction. You know, their hope, you know, they're putting their hope in a distraction. And of course, the science and scientific process and so on and so forth, that seems to be something that that you can really put your hope in. But the problem is, again, the problem is you're dealing with human beings. You know, that you're not dealing with just pure logic. I mean, you're not dealing with, you're dealing with human beings that, you know, especially nowadays, they have to be, you know, they're sort of, if they're going to be scientists, quote unquote, they have to be pretty much atheists. You know, they're really kind of pressured into becoming atheists. Where's their ethical standards? What ethical standards do they have? Because many of them don't. So, but you should listen to your gut instinct, because it, you know, and again, you know, you can be fooled by thinking, you know, what is an instinct, what is a real gut instinct and what isn't. What you have to do is don't act, you know, don't act out of pressure. Because if it's a real gut instinct, you're going to know it. But if you act out of pressure, or if you act because you think someone, you have to act now. You act now, you know, like the advertisement says, you must act now and take advantage of the sale or whatever. And of course, they're applying pressure to you. Why do you think they have sales and so on? They're applying psychological pressure to you that, oh, you're going to save money by spending it. Sounds like the federal government. So you should never act out of pressure. So, the other thing I wanted to talk about, periodically, I'll get people, they'll kind of subtly attack me, you know, without really doing it, and they'll say, well, you're a sinner too. And I've periodically I'll get that, and you know when I'm But what you have to understand, I'm not trying to make myself the example. Now, sometimes I do use myself as an example. You know, or I'll use anecdotes out of my own life as sort of an example, like I just did with the quitting the network administrator job. But because it was just basically my gut instinct told me to do it, and I did it. But the thing you have to realize, I'm just observing. You know, I'm observing, you know, I'm an observer observing. And you have to understand, I'm not saying that I'm perfect. I'm not. How many, you know, I've repeated that over and over again. I am not perfect. And I'm not holding myself out as being perfect. Far from it. But, you know, but I'll periodically get that, you know, where people will sort of begin to try to denigrate me. And I think the reason they do that is because it's easy to sort of begin to browbeat the messenger, you know, or find flaws in the messenger so that you can sort of discount the message. Find flaws in the observer. So that, you know, you can discount the observations. So if you want to do that, fine, have at it. But I still see what I see, and I observe what I observe, and I'm going to continue to do that. And just as happy-go-lucky as possible. Just, kind of like a Jiminy Cricket observer, just observing away. And that's one of the reasons why I continue to do this podcast. Because I've done all of these different episodes over the years, I benefit from it. I've benefited from it. I can't begin to enumerate the ways I've really benefited from just making my observations. You know, I learn a lot of times I really learn as I do the podcast. And so again, that's one of the reasons I continue to do it. So anyway, I think I'm going to go ahead and bring this to a close. See if I can't get to bed, and then we'll find out tomorrow whether or not they actually have a load there, or if it's going to be Monday for that, because I rather suspect that that will be the case. Because if it's coming from the same plant and it's going to this other place in Pennsylvania, and the loads are just hours apart, chances are it's the same product. And if they don't have it for the first load, chances are they're not going to have it for the second one. And it's probably going to be exactly the same thing. So I think it's pork product of some sort. So in any case, hope everyone is having a great weekend so far. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.